golfj.com.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to our special 2016 Open Championship preview episode of the Golf J podcast on FingerLakes1.tv. I'm Jim Sinacropi alongside Rhett Ticone and Doug Brown here inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in Seneca Falls, New York. It's Monday, July 11th, 2016, and fellas, it's major time, third major of the season.
The toughest one in my mind. I love this tournament.
Toughest to watch live.
Well, yeah.
1 o'clock in the morning.
The hours, for sure. Right. This is the best one. I love the fact that it is in the morning, though, too, right. Like you said earlier.
It is a good Sunday morning. Get up and watch it. It's over by, I don't know, noon.
Yeah.
We'll say, right? Give or take.
I usually play in the morning and then watch the last, five, six holes.
Right.
Hit the course when I'm done.
Yep. Coming in.
On Sunday. So, but Saturday morning I'll try to watch it. But before we get into the British Open talk and everything going on at Royal Troon later this week, a couple topics that I'd like to address first. And, you know, anybody that watched the U.S. Open yesterday live had to be amazed at the fact that there was another rules controversy down the stretch that where the golfers didn't know that they violated a rule and the whole enjoyment of watching the competition was basically ruined, right?
Turned right back to the USGA.
So for those of us that don't know what I'm talking about, Brittany Lang emerges as the winner Sunday. An American win in the U.S. Open in women's golf, that's a pretty big story, I think.
Sure is.
And but she emerged from a fog of confusion because it was another USGA-hosted event in which video replay was needed to on a ruling. She apparently grounded her club in a bunker, and nobody with her naked eye could see this, but after Fox was able to provide super zoomed in, that you could see her hit basically one grain of sand, and it was clear she did before she took it away, resulting in a two-stroke penalty, and the USGA didn't notify her before she hit Anna Nordqvist, was the woman who was penalized, and the USGA did not notify her before she played her next shot, but they did notify.
It's a different hole. That happened in a second playoff hole.
Right, and then she played one more shot before she knew that she was penalized.
She was in the middle of the third playoff hole when she got notified.
Oh, really? I thought it was just one shot that.
She hit the fairway bunker shot on the par 4 17th hole.
Right.
And she got notified after her third shot on the par 5 18th. So there was like a, I don't know, 10-minute delay, 15-minute delay, we'll say.
Well, the Fox's story is that they first, you know, notified the rules committee and then reviewed it and didn't see anything at first, but then they got a closer look with more zoomed-in HD footage.
Right.
Yeah.
Then they saw it, then they had to consult with the rules committee, and then they immediately went and told the golfers.
Right.
Yeah. But that was all that took about a hole, almost, to figure that out.
Then they notified them at different points of shot making.
Right. And that was where you were saying
Nordqvist had already hit her third shot and Lang had not hit her third yet.
Right.
And had a difficult third shot-ish, difficult. And then all of a sudden she's got a two-shot cushion.
Right.
And she, surprise.
And admitted she played safe. In the
but
she admitted she played to the
right. Played much safer than she would have if she had to, had to make a play for her, knowing that she had a two-shot lead at that point.
Right.
But regardless, it kills the drama.
It took the air out of the balloon.
And why does this never happen in a PGA Tour event,
Right.
Why does this never, ever, ever happen in a PGA Tour event, but it's happened now in two consecutive USGA events?
So they have more cameras out there, right? We learned that in the U.S. Open for the men's tournament. They had more cameras, more ground crew, more this, more that. Right?
Even for the women's open, though, you think?
Well, there's only, all the cameras around two players.
Well, at that point, yeah.
Okay, so it kind of filter that down to that focus.
How about Fox, though? They've got to be like, what do we have to do to just have a nice, normal
tournament?
Well, the
same with the USGA. They've got to be feeling the same way.
Yeah, and not have to talk about this the whole time. I mean, the U.S. Open for the men, it was, another 12 holes for this. It's right in the middle of sudden death. Yeah. They got to deal with this and not just talk about the players and their shots. I kind of feel bad for both of those guys, in both groups, to have to deal with all of this stuff as opposed to just watching the golf and let it unfold, in a normal way.
It's almost like they're really zooming in on all these shots in case there's an infraction, it almost to set them up.
Yeah, and that's why I think there needs to be a change. I think that that video evidence should not, you shouldn't be able to go back after the shot is hit a certain amount of time or before the next shot's hit. If it's a penalty hasn't been called, now if there's some question immediately and you can streamline the process like the NFL does,
right?
You know, have a replay official on site at every event, especially every of these USGA events, and have them able to make that call. But of course, you wouldn't be able to give that type of treatment to the whole field on Thursday or Friday,
right?
But on Sunday in the final round, you can keep it. You can have a replay team reviewing every shot,
right,
of the contenders.
And so then you'd be basically taking a timeout in between shots, and this is up for review. So
yeah,
before you hit your third shot, we're going to take a look at your second.
Yeah, and we'll know within 3 minutes, you know, okay, or whatever time it would be.
Well, it also goes back to the rules in general as they are anyways. It's,
yeah,
like the men's U.S. Open, we're talking about a ball that moved, you know, tenth of a millimeter of an inch,
yeah,
that, you know, the player did or didn't cause that to happen. Now we're talking about a small granular of sand that she may or may not have touched.
Right.
She didn't set her club down in the bunker. And I know they're the rules, and obviously we all have to go by those, but, man, they're pretty, I mean, just so over the top.
Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, Greg Norman, they all could have committed violations in major championships like that, and nobody will ever know,
right,
because the quality of the camera wasn't good enough, and there certainly wasn't how prolific video is now,
right,
you know.
Right.
Once some piece of high-definition video is out there, it can hit social media, and you can replay it from 8 different angles and manipulate it.
It's like you said with that, you know, with Dustin Johnson. If he does that 20 years ago, they ruled right then and there. The official said, you know, did you cause it to move? No. Okay, play on. And nobody ever saw it or knows about it because there's not the coverage, like you're saying.
Yeah, and we didn't, and we don't need a video replay because the golfers police themselves generally.
Right.
And so I don't see why. Let's just say, I wonder what would happen in this particular instance, the Dustin Johnson instance, whether the video was released or not. I think everybody would have been happy with the fact that he said he didn't cause it to move and they played on.
Right.
In this case, there was a definite rules infraction. You didn't need to interpret the rules, but it was so minor,
right,
that I think even if it was brought up later, that you wouldn't feel like anybody was cheated because the wrong ruling was made.
Right.
I mean, so
yeah,
I let the golfers and the officials on the course,
right,
make the decisions or provide us with a streamlined video review process like the NFL has.
Sure.
And because this just can't happen. The, you know, people playing golf when they don't know what their score is in the final holes of a major.
So what,
right,
so what's going to happen at the U.S. Amateur coming up with the USGA?
Well, they won't have
something.
They won't have as many cameras, though.
Right.
So
what's the next thing that's going to come up, though? You're
that,
right.
That big. You know, you mentioned Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer. Let's face it. All those guys has touched a grain of sand,
sure,
like Anna Norquist did yesterday. But they don't know it because it's such a small touch, right?
Well, that's what I mean by the rule.
If they dragged the sand back and flew away, they'd have put the flag on themselves.
Yeah.
That girl didn't even know she touched it. She didn't see the sand move under the club.
There was no intent to do that.
Correct.
Either. I mean, that's why some of these rules are just so over the top.
Right.
It's just,
right. And it's tough because you can't say, okay, well, she didn't touch enough sand to make it a violation.
Right.
The next guy is going to go in there and dig underneath and say, well, I didn't touch much either.
Yeah.
Right? So the rule is written okay. It's just that, I think you're right. We got to figure out what we're going to do with these cameras and how to prevent it.
Golf's a gentleman's game, so to speak, and you know these guys are,
right,
for the most part, we're calling stuff on ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's the way, you know, you'd like to see it happen, as you guys said. If the official and the players all agree that nothing,
right,
was, you know, nothing wrong was done, or there was no intent to do anything like that, then keep moving.
And it's funny too because you contrast it with other sports where, when there's a rules infraction, the players like argue with the refs about it,
you know,
and there's
a
foul or there's a fumble or,
right,
a penalty,
right,
a pass interference call or a strike or a ball.
Sure.
You know, it's all imperfect. So why can golf's rules generally try to make it so there's a black and white,
right,
line between everything?
Yeah.
But in all other sports, there's a little bit of gray area, and these calls made by officials influence those contests, you know, weekly.
Yeah.
You know, the technology they have with the cameras, I think the TV networks want to provide that technology so we can see the strike of the ball. You can see how the ball reacts to the club and the dirt or the sand or whatever.
Yeah.
And we want that as well.
Sure, yeah, it's fun.
Okay. We'd hate to
eye
say,
candy.
Don't get within 100 yards of her. so we don't see an infraction.
Yeah, right.
We don't want that. Yeah, that's 1950s.
No, definitely not.
Right? So we got to figure out how to manage all this. And, you know, I think USGA's had a tough year as well.
It's been great for our show, though.
Yeah, we got something to talk about.
Some extra stuff to talk
about. On top
of
all this, you know, so you can feel some sympathy for the USGA until you watch the award ceremony at the U.S. Opens where the president of the USGA, Dinah Murphy, introduced Brittany as Bethany in the trophy presentation and then kept referring to her as Bethany.
Yeah, several times.
And she also screwed up the U.S. Open.
She did.
You know,
and you say that,
so this is two in a row, and there's no excuse. You've just crowned a champion, your organization, you're the president.
Right.
You have to know her name. You have to get it right.
Not to mention, you're watching the tournament. You know the it went to sudden death.
To
a playoff, and there's only two names out. You got an hour to figure that out. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
It is.
It's an embarrassment.
I don't see why.
Did you notice
she should keep her job, right?
Did you notice Brittany did not step forward?
Yeah.
She kept calling for Bethany? And she kept looking around?
Yeah,
so Brittany was confused.
Maybe there's a low amateur named Bethany or something. Yeah.
It's a shame.
It's too bad for the winner.
It is. Well,
Brittany.
Well, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. And obviously, we're going to get into the British Open stuff pretty soon. But today, the Olympic rosters were finally set. And Jordan Spieth also announced he wasn't playing today. At Rio, so the U.S. team looks like it's going to be Bubba Watson, Ricky Fowler, Patrick Reed, and Matt Kuchar. So that's a nice four from America, but it's not certainly our best.
No, I think.
And we have different opinions on this.
Well, I think you got to go with your opinion on the event itself, and then your opinion on based on having the event. Like, how do you feel about these guys and how, whether they play or don't play? You know. We've talked about the format of the event, and we all think, I think, on the same plane there that the format could be a little different.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps a Ryder Cup type format or something along those lines. But, you know, in my mind, with all these guys backing out, I understand their reasonings, and I think for the most part they've all used Zika as the reason. And it's hard to say in their shoes with, you know, families and young kids and wanting to have more kids potentially with that they aren't going, but I just think that they're using this as an excuse to, because they don't want to go play because the schedule's so tight and there's a lot of things that are, you know, there's some things that might be more important. Obviously, major championships and things like that are golf's bigger prizes, but it's the Olympics and none of the top ladies are backing out, and they're more at risk than the guys.
Well, look at it this way. For a woman, the Olympics are going to put a spotlight on their game. More people will watch the Olympic women's golf than will watch the U.S. Open. But for the men, you know, the majors are still the marquee events, and the majors are the ones that they grew up hoping to win.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you know, the women grew up hoping to win the U.S. Open, too, but they never knew they had the opportunity at Olympic gold. They, you know, the Nabisco is a major, used to be in the, you know, the LPGA.
Let me ask you this, though. Okay, so the Ryder Cup, we all know, is a huge event in golf. Why does that mean so much to those guys?
Tradition.
Because it's a team event, which is important in golf.
But why does it mean so much? It means so much because they're representing their country.
Yes.
And that's the biggest problem I have with this, is because they're still representing their country. The Olympics is a huge event, whether you're a pro competing in it for the first time and it's something new, or you're somebody that's the biggest achievement of your sport.
Right.
It's still for your country. And
I think that it's that they say they like playing for the country in the Ryder Cup, but they really like being on the team and the camaraderie of the team more than the country, because the same people, the people in Europe like it just the same, and they're not playing for national pride as much. You know, they're all from different countries. I think that it's easy to say that, but in truth, they aren't necessarily playing for their country as much as they want to be involved in the whole event and in the team event, which I think the Olympics could have benefited if it was a team event instead of an individual event. But that's another argument.
Right,
but these guys, I kind of wish they were playing, because it would be much better to watch if, you know, right now four of the top five in the world, Spieth, Day, Johnson, and McIlroy, aren't going to be there. Right. So what kind of tournament is it? You know, it's the field from top to bottom is no better than, you know, than the Bob Hope Classic.
Yeah, there's definitely, it definitely would be much better and everybody would watch it. But I think that's the point, is like these guys playing it, it's much more appetizing to watch it, you know. Right. Obviously, the guys that were all for this 6-7 years ago when it was introduced are Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, guys like that that aren't even playing in this. And I hope it'll gain some traction, because I think a lot of the same sentiment was going around with tennis when they started with the pros in tennis. I know McEnroe bailed out. A few others did as well those first few years. But McEnroe has also said it was one of his biggest regrets, not right. representing his country. So I'm just kind of, you know, the country thing to me, whether it's a big tournament or not, being able to represent your country is something I think that, you know, I wish they would do it for that. Because the reasons they're given aren't, you know, it's like a 0.1% chance that Zika has anything to do with it. Nobody that's worked at the golf course has contracted the virus. So I think it's kind of, it's an excuse. They're using it as a crutch.
They're going to rest up for the FedEx Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, 6 months ago, I mean, Jordan Spieth even has an interview on TV or a commercial about he can't wait to walk into the stadium carrying the American flag.
And, right.
You know,
yeah.
with all those athletes. Well, right. they better pull that commercial now.
Yeah.
Because that's, I don't know if it was Under Armour or not, but it might have been just an Olympic commercial in general. But I agree. I think they're all running for the wrong
reasons.
They've
been given an out, and they're taking it because they don't really want to travel to Brazil, which is a borderline third world country at this point with all the disease and law enforcement issues and emergency personnel issues they're having over there.
Right.
And they're traveling every week, and this is a chance to take a week off, I think. So they gave them an out.
They're definitely using it as an out because, you know, security and all of that, the guys in the NBA are all going.
Right.
I mean, the guys that are going from the NBA, the security is going to be at an all-time high, and they're way more recognizable around the world than some of these golfers. I mean, we all know who these golfers are, but I think you're right. They're just using the virus as a crutch to
get
out of it.
There's an equal security risk right now going to the British Open.
Sure.
As far as going to Rio.
Anywhere.
I mean, the way the world's going.
Yeah.
I mean,
the women's U.S. the women Olympics tournament is going to be outstanding because people are going to want more people are going to be paying attention to women's golf than normal. The men's, I don't know exactly how I'm going to feel about it until I see it play out.
Sure.
I'll have to watch it myself. Right now, looking at the field, I'm not excited at all. If it was a full field and all these guys were coming, I still don't think I'd be as excited about it as I am the British Open this week.
So they put the Olympics, or golf in the Olympics, to develop and grow golf in some other countries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's assume Iceland's got a team, and I have no idea if they do or not, but they just did good in soccer, so
we'll
talk about Iceland, right? So how cool would it be for the guy from Iceland to get in the finals against a Rory McIlroy and beat him?
Right.
He'd be like Sari Pak.
Right.
You know how well they revere her in Korea,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So now this guy from Iceland's going to play, let's say, Patrick Reed. And I don't mean to blast Patrick Reed. He's not Rory McIlroy
right.
in stature,
sure.
right? Does it have the same impact on the country? I didn't beat number one or number two. I beat
Patrick Reed,
their B team player.
I think
it's like if I was a swimmer, I want to race Michael Phelps.
Right.
Right. I want to win the gold medal with Michael Phelps in the pool. Not, well, Michael was sick and he couldn't swim, but I got a gold medal.
Right.
Right. That type of thing.
I mean, I think everybody from us to the other players to, you know, the broadcasters. All wanted to see those guys,
right.
you know. I think they're the only guys that really don't, and I don't want to say they don't care, but these guys really didn't, I don't know how much they thought about the whole
right.
picture of this whole thing and growing it. They're younger
right.
guys. They're not really as focused on long-term effects yet,
right.
probably, and we'll give them that. But
right.
you know, I'm just very disappointed that a guy like Jordan Spieth's not going.
I think we should let the Olympic Committee know that the three of us are ready to go at any time. We'll wear red, white, and blue.
Absolutely.
We'll play ping pong.
Yeah, we'll do
right.
whatever. Well, I don't know if we want to do that. We might get crushed in that.
No, but in the team room.
Oh, in the team room, sure, sure.
Well, time to start talking about a real golf tournament that does feature 84 of the top 85 golfers
Absolutely.
In the world, and that's this week's Open Championship at Royal Troon, where British Open, been at Royal Troon. This will be the ninth time, and the club opened in 1878, designed in the traditional out-and-back manner of the old course at St. Andrews. I mean, this is a genuine links course. A gentle opening few holes and relatively straightforward closing stretch are the bookends for a series of holes which weave up, round, and down some of the most striking links landscape to be found at any of the Open's rotation of courses. So the thing about this week to remember is that the forecast is for high winds and rain.
Right.
You know, so, yeah. I mean, this is going to be, you can play Royal Troon under somewhat calm conditions, and it's not that difficult of a golf course, but 20 to 30 mile per hour winds are what they're predicting for the weekend.
Right.
And it becomes ridiculously difficult. And you're not going to have it one way or another because nine holes go out and nine go in. So one of them is going to be easy and the other one's going to be ridiculously hard.
Yeah.
So it should be great viewing. The actual forecast Thursday calls for no rain but 15 mile per hour winds. That's pretty decent day for scoring. But then on Friday, 90% chance of rain, 20 mile per hour winds. Saturday, 60% chance of rain, 30 mile per hour winds. Sunday, 70% chance of rain, 20 mile per hour winds. And daily, the high will be about in the lower 60s.
Yeah.
So, which is, that's actually normal.
Normal, yeah, right. For over there.
For over there, but, yeah.
I mean, they've scored on this course. And the last three wins were 10, 12, 13 under par.
12 under, Todd Hamilton won it in 2004 at 10 under.
Yeah.
Justin Leonard won it in 1997 at 12 under. Right. Kalkovecchia won it in 89 at 13 under. And then in 82, Watson won it at 4 under. But it was probably, you know, that was a condition-wise.
Rough weather days.
Yeah. So
we could be in for a minus 4 or worse this week.
Yeah, it could
after
be.
Thursday.
And it certainly...
But do you think anybody, like, is this one of those ones where somebody runs, you know, puts a low number out Thursday and then just kind of protects that lead the whole time? Or
yeah, shoots like one over the next three rounds,
yeah,
wins.
Yeah.
Time of writing the weather, you go out at 6:45 in the morning, it's calm.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be, and a good majority of those holes roll along the ocean, too.
Yes.
So.
Well, of all the major championships, scoring records, you know, single round, two round, 54 hole, 36 hole lead. None of them happened at Royal Troon. They all happened at other courses in the rotation. So with the wind, this is going to be fun to watch. And if you watch the Scottish Open at all this weekend, you got a taste of what some of this might be. The first couple of the rounds there were really, really bad weather.
You got to watch too. The greens are slow in this tournament because of the wind. They're probably going to be seven. I don't know, taking a guess. But,
right, but not.
Because if not, the wind would blow the golf ball all over the place for them. So they'll be hitting some putts pretty hard.
Yep. How long was that one Phil Mickelson hit the other day?
I didn't see it.
It's like 100 feet or something. It's a crazy long one.
Did he hole it?
No, but he and Bones were joking back and forth about, you know, which club to use. They're on the green. So, yeah, there'll be some long ones. You're right.
Yeah, a couple things to watch for, too. Royal Troon is home to the shortest and longest holes in the open rotation, the shortest being the postage stamp hole, famously called the postage stamp. It plays at 123 yards with a tiny green about, 420 square feet.
Yeah. That's pretty small.
Yeah, it's not much bigger than the room we're in here. And you can imagine, being oceanside with 30 mile per hour wind, how difficult that 123 yards is.
Yeah.
I think Graham McDowell in a practice round last week hit a 6-iron because it was into the wind.
Reminds me of number 7 at Pebble.
Yeah.
Like you can be hitting a pitching wedge or a 3-iron.
Yeah.
Depending on the conditions.
And then the other two holes before that would be the 6th, which is a par 5 called Turnberry, which is 601 yards, which is the longest of any hole in the open rotation.
Right.
So you get the long and short of it there. And the other thing to think about here is, you know, I can remember looking at the PGA schedule back in, you know, February or April, and it just looked like there was an infinity, you know, of like an unlimited amount of tournaments ahead. Week after week, you had to scroll down on the webpage for minutes to get to the bottom. And now we're 10 weeks out from the Tour Championship. So
that's crazy.
It's all going to happen fast from here on out, and then 11 weeks from the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
So this season is coming to an end, but don't worry, the new one will start right up. Two weeks.
What do we have? We have our open preview show, our open wrap up, and then we'll be doing our PGA preview show.
Yes, we will.
So. Yeah.
Almost bang bang.
Yeah.
And think of this: we're 11 weeks away from the Ryder Cup, but I think we're 13 weeks away from the start of next season.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're here talking about the British Open. The new season starts in 13 weeks.
Did you get our passes to the Ryder Cup yet?
Not. They must be lost in the mail.
You're working on that.
So if somebody gets hot in these next 10 weeks, they can move up that leaderboard on the money list.
No doubt.
You know, you've seen it in the past where, like, Stenson that one year, all of a sudden, you know, he won an event towards the end, but he also was second place, mm-hmm. won the FedEx Cup.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how much money they can actually gain in a short period of time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can go from a pauper to a prince in a short period of time here at the end of the season. So
earn your tour card and, or lose it.
Billy Horschel.
Yeah, good point.
Right. He made his career in these last 10 weeks.
Yeah, he won two of the FedEx Cup tournaments, right?
Yeah.
And ended up winning the whole thing.
And then hadn't done anything since.
No, and just except for wear loud pants.
That's the problem. You can't play golf in pants like that.
Him and John Daly need to talk to each other.
So lots of storylines to follow at True, and the biggest storyline to me is you got Dustin Johnson, now number two in the world, facing off against Jason Day, number one in the world, in a field with 84 of the top 85 golfers in the world golf rankings. So DJ just won the U.S. Open, just won the Bridgestone. Seems like a no-brainer to win this one, too, but... you know, Jason Day holding on to number one, and Day was right there at the U.S. Open, especially, until the second to last hole. So we'll give our picks later, but, you know. And then you got McIlroy, who didn't even play in the British Open last year.
Trying to get hurt.
After his ankle injury, right. And he's rounded into form over the past few weeks, finishing in the top five in three of his last four worldwide starts. And then Jordan Spieth, you know, kind of falling off the radar, is in the hunt for the top player in the world. So, and then you throw in a guy like Zach Johnson defending the title. He won last year with conditions like this. I think that would favor Johnson over the Dustin Johnsons and the Jason Days of the world. So, I mean, this tournament has it all.
Well, he's won two majors doing it that way. So, sure, you're right. Is. I mean, he's a grinder, and he knows how to play in bad conditions.
Last six Open championships won by an American.
That's a good thing.
Are at Troon. The last Opens at Troon. Last six Opens at Royal Troon.
Okay. Todd Hamilton. Huh? Remember that one? Came out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere is right.
Yeah, then went back to nowhere.
They were like, who? What? Him and Ben. That was the.
That's
that
what
was,
you hate to see in a major, I think. I don't know, Cinderella story, I guess, but.
That was the run of what Ben Curtis won it the year before, right? In 03? Was it 03? Or was it 05? No, it was 03 because 05 Tiger won it.
Stuart Sink won one, right?
And then McKeel won at Oak Hill.
Yeah, there was
in 03, so that was a different stretch.
There was a stretch where we had some one and doneers.
Yeah,
for sure.
So you think? What do you think this year? We're going to have someone come from the field. There's a huge field. I mean, as a golf fan, you're going to look at the list of entries, and there's going to be 30% of them you never heard of.
I think the weather being that bad, I think somebody could sneak in from off the radar.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like I said earlier, chances of somebody going out low and running high, you know, after they have one good round. Or, you know, somebody always throws a real low number out on Sunday early.
Right.
And that might be enough to get there if the weather gets really bad. You never know.
Well, there's a rules infraction.
Fox isn't covering this one. It's on NBC.
NBC, so we're okay.
Which, by the way, NBC, 50 hours of live coverage. It's 5-hour time difference between there and where we are broadcasting from here on the East Coast. But Thursday through Friday, you're going to be seeing live golf from 1:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the Golf Channel. Then on Saturday, it's 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. coverage on the Golf Channel, followed by 7 to about 2:30 on NBC. And that would be the same on Sunday as well, 4 to 7 a.m. on the Golf Channel.
And we
7 to 2 on NBC.
We get Mike Tirico, right, in the booth?
Tirico's not going to anchor it. It's going to be anchored by Johnny Miller and Dan Hicks. But he is going to be the studio host, which will be pretty cool.
Absolutely.
He's been to a lot of Opens, as this is the first year it hasn't been done by ABC, ESPN. As a matter of fact, it was supposed to be another ABC year, but ABC negotiated with NBC get out a year early,
right.
NBC was going to be taken over. So they negotiated that well over a year ago, about the same time that they struck the deal, with the RNA to become the new broadcast. So golfchannel.com will live stream it all, too, which is nice.
That'll be cool seeing Johnny Miller at the Open. Mm-hmm. You know, we're used to seeing him at the U.S. Open, but, you know, Tirico and that crew for a long time at the
He's a past champion.
Yeah? So it'll be neat to see him there. I think he'll have a lot of good insight, and he's always very candid with his comments.
Always candid, no doubt.
It's always fun to hear him, tell everybody what they should and shouldn't have done.
He does a good job.
We got an experienced crew here. You know, NBC and CBS are the two networks that really excel at covering golf,
right?
As opposed to Fox, where it's been new. Be interesting to see if they take anything from Fox, from the shot tracker and the stuff we talked about a couple weeks ago. But NBC now going to a new venue to cover a golf tournament, of course. The Open's unlike any of the other three majors. You know, no, you can just tell by turning it on and looking at it.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what NBC does.
I think it'll be good, and especially with all the coverage. I mean, 50 hours, that's an unbelievable number. I mean, I'm trying. How many hours you guys think each of us will be able to watch of that?
48.
I'll be sleeping through the middle of most of the rounds, and then I'll probably catch the beginning late night until I can fall asleep, you know, as long as I can stay awake, and then catch the tail end of each round at work streaming.
For me, I guess it's all who the featured groups are and when they go off. If
I got some groups here for you. Actually, I got 4:25 a.m. will be Jordan Spieth, Justin Rose, and Shane Lowry. That's a pretty good group. Mm-hmm. Along, and also 4:25 a.m. must be off the opposite tee. Danny Willett, Jason Day, and Ricky Fowler.
All right, I can get up for that.
4:36 a.m., you got McIlroy, Matsuyama, and Bubba Watson paired together. And then if you are going to just catch the tail end of these in, you know, normal waking hours, at 9:04 a.m. Eastern Time, it's Dustin Johnson, Martin Keimer, and Russell Knox. And at 9:15, it's defending champion Zach Johnson, Adam Scott, and Henrik Stenson. So, among others. But those are probably the most power-packed star power groups.
Well, I can get a few hours sleep then and get up at 4:30. That'd be perfect.
I am excited to see Colin Montgomery, who qualified through local qualifying, compete as a guy who never won a major championship. He's a member of Royal Troon. Yeah. His father once served as the club's secretary. His father's still alive at age 86, so he's going to get to watch Colin play. He's played at Troon before, too. Yeah. Montgomery actually hit the first tee shot of the whole Open. He's in the first group at 1:35 a.m. Eastern time, 6:30 a.m. local time.
Right.
And he's got three senior tour majors, and he's playing decent golf, and this is a course he's familiar with. Although he did not grow up on it, he could not play the course till he turned 18.
Right.
So, you know, his father was a member, but he had to play. They have a children's course, apparently, and he probably played other places. But, you know, that would be the story of the decade in golf. If Colin Montgomery was able to, at age 53, somehow win, you know, that elusive major.
Right.
And he whooped. There was a couple times he may have won majors if it wasn't during the Tiger era.
Right.
So
you're going to hear that he had a great first round ever at that golf course when he turned 18. I'm sure it'll be on the broadcast this weekend. I think he shot 70 his first time on a golf course.
Oh, wow.
Something like that, or 69. I don't know.
Probably been waiting, you know, his whole life at that point to play.
Yeah.
So could he do it? Sure. Hey, Tom Watson almost did it a few years ago, and he was older than Montgomery.
Yeah, he was 59.
And I never liked Montgomery at all, you know, when he was in his prime. But, you know, as he's become an analyst on the Golf Channel and start to feel a little sympathy for the poor guy with all the pressure the European community put on him as the top European player.
Well, he's mellowed a little bit over the years. He went in the crowd a couple times, maybe a little bit sensitive.
Said a lot of bad things about Americans.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he was hard to like.
Yeah, he definitely
did. I take the same position as you. He's come around in my mind quite a bit. But you go back 15, 20 years ago, probably the most disliked non-American golfer.
Oh, yeah. He was easy not to like.
Well, especially, too, at those Ryder Cups. Yeah. He took a lot of abuse at the Ryder Cups.
And he actually won the Ryder Cup, which was the one thing, looking back at his career. He may not have even made the World Golf Hall of Fame if it wasn't for the Ryder Cup performances. But that's the one thing he can certainly hang his hat on.
He won, like, the Order of Merit 7 years in a row.
Yeah, he was dominant on the European Tour.
Like that. Yeah.
But
whether that gets you in the Hall of Fame or not, I don't know. But he dominated, that's for darn sure.
And most remembered stateside, probably, for the fact that he never, you know, never came through in a major.
Right.
And his nickname of Mrs. Doubtfire. That's probably what he's most remembered for in the States by the casual golf fan.
So my fantasy golf team took a hit when I read today that Brooks Koepka wasn't going to play in the Open with an ankle injury. I'm really upset when a golfer, especially if you draft him on your fantasy golf team, doesn't play because of an injury in a major, you know. Half the reason you draft a guy like that is you think this might be the year you might win a major.
Yeah.
Don't you get to substitute for him?
It would be nice, yes. But no, certainly no substitutions allowed in the league that we're in. So don't pick Koepka on your fantasy teams this year or this week. And one other storyline, if you remember last year, the 54-hole leader was Paul Dunn. I don't know if you guys recall that.
I do not recall that.
And then he finished outside the top 10 after a horrible final round, meaning he was not invited back. But it will be back thanks to local qualifying. He is one of just 12 local qualifiers along with Colin Montgomery.
Good.
So Paul Dunn will be back. And that brings me to, we'll give our picks, our official picks in just a bit. But first, time for a little Golf J trivia challenge. Be the first to tweet the answer to us at the Golf J, and you'll win a Golf J hat. This week's question is, what golfing legend aced the postage stamp hole, the par 3 8th at Royal Troon in the 1973 Open Championship at age 71? So we'll give the answer at the end of the show. Once again, real quick, what golfing legend aced the postage stamp hole at Royal Troon in the 1973 Open at age 71? So, golf tip time. I always seem to give the golf tips, but I tasked you guys with coming up with some golf tips, and Doug has this week's tip. So, Brownie, why don't you go ahead?
Okay. Very simple. Using a scorecard or anything, piece of paper or a piece of cardboard, but most people, when they chip, and even in full swings, tend to try to lift the ball. So, sometimes they'll hit fat behind it, or they're going to scull it, and occasionally they will hit a good shot. But for some reason, people try to lift it, and the left hand breaks down and all that stuff.
Sure. Okay, so your solution.
So you take a scorecard, any scorecard, you set it on the ground. I actually poked a couple tees through the scorecard so that it doesn't blow away or it doesn't move while you're there. You place the ball in front of the scorecard, and that picture, it's about 5 or 6 inches in front of the scorecard. And in this shot, we're going to hit the ball to the right. Okay? The idea is to hit the golf ball without hitting the scorecard, which will lead to a descending blow. As you get better at it, you should be able to get the golf ball back towards the scorecard within a couple of inches. Especially on like a wedge shot, you want to have more of a descending blow than you would, say, on a 5-iron. Now, right. If you're hitting the scorecard, you're not delivering a descending blow.
You're not doing it right.
Right. The benefit of the scorecard is they cost less than a penny, and it's not going to break or not going to hurt you or anything like that, right?
And they're usually available at golf courses.
Right. And again, any piece of paper, a pencil out of your golf bag, some device. It's amazing. If you go back to the first picture where it shows about 6-inch gap, it's amazing how intimidating that is to people.
Even with that gap.
That's a huge gap. A huge gap, right? But it's amazing. But if you take a junior golfer, a beginning golfer, or somebody who's really having trouble chipping, and just put a barrier behind it, and you can promote a striking down on the golf ball, it hasn't got to be steep. It's got to be a couple degrees downward. You'll catch the ball first. It'll promote some backspin, and you got total control. Right? This is a matter of speed then for the distance. Okay? I believe there's a video if you can show that.
Yeah, so here's what it looks like in action.
Now you'll notice the ball was struck. The scorecard was not, and the divot actually is in front of the ball on the right side.
Yeah, way in front of it. You know, from that close up, it's a good inch in front of it.
That ball was perfectly struck. Now, that's a pretty full swing right there. I would use this device first on, like, you're off the green by 10 or 15 feet. Just start with that, with, like, a pitching wedge or a sand wedge, whatever, and then lengthen the distance you want to hit the ball, but using the same technique, all right, all the way up to maybe even a 5-iron. And you'd be surprised, I think, how much you'd improve the ball striking in a very short period of time.
Because even with a full iron shot, you want to hit the ball first.
Yes.
You don't want to hit 2 inches behind the ball.
But you can hear people when they hit, you'll hear double hit almost with it, ground and then ball. It almost like goes click, click. And that's the shot you want to get rid of. All right? Now, yeah, you might get away with it sometimes, but overall you're going to have inconsistent shots. With that technique on a practice session like that, you hit 20 of them, and you'll be a better chipper and a better ball striker, even from 100 yards, 150 yards.
So there's a tip, Rhett. What are you going to have next week that's going to top that?
I got some work to do.
That had videos, graphical pictures, and video assets.
Jeez, I mean, making me really going to have to work for this.
You guys have done a lot. I had to bring a lot to the show here this time. So
that's what we want, though, with this golf tip segment, because none of us are pros. We know some pros that we could ask for tips and stuff like that, and we can. But we want simple, something simple that maybe our listeners can then just say, "Oh yeah, that resonates with me a little bit. I'm going to try that. Yep. Maybe help them out a little bit."
Absolutely.
So it's definitely a great tip. So now for some tips on the betting side of things.
The bookies.
We need winners.
A lot of bets over in the across the pond.
They gamble, don't they?
In this event, yeah, definitely.
We need winners for this week at the Open, and because of the dominance, I think, of Dustin Johnson, I'm wondering how many of us are going to pick Dustin Johnson right now.
It would be three in a row if he won this week, so that he's played in, obviously.
Yeah.
So that's a tall order.
Well, yeah, that's what happens. You know, you got a guy that wins two in a row, you watch him, you're like, he can't lose again.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he doesn't win, you know, again for 4 months.
Right.
He's got to be the betting favorite.
Yeah, but you just watch this guy, and now that he's got the monkey off his back of not winning a major,
right,
after coming so close, it's hard not to pick him this week.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, what's to say he doesn't win three out of the four majors this year? The way he's playing, especially how they're all bunched together so close this year, that's a benefit too. We're staying hot. He's right there. He played 2 weeks ago and won. 2 weeks before that and won. Now it's so every 2 weeks he's playing a tournament and maybe he's winning it. And then 2 weeks from now it's the PGA. So, yeah, he's it's the perfect timing for him to stay on this.
So who's your pick?
Doug and I picked him 2 weeks ago and we finally got one right for a while. I'm going to go with Dustin Johnson. I like Zach Johnson a lot in these conditions that are supposedly going to be there, but I do like Dustin Johnson. I want to keep it going with him. Much to your rule of if Jason Day's in the tournament type thing. I think right now if Dustin Johnson's in the tournament, he's a pretty good bet.
You can't argue with that. Ronnie, who do you like?
So I'm going to go a little off the board compared to what we've done in the past. I'm going to go with Sergio Garcia.
Whoa.
Because of the weather, because of his ball striking. More experience playing in that slop, if you will, if the weather's that bad. Hits the ball a lot lower for overall. And I think the putting deficiency that he has will be neutralized because the greens are going to be so slow. Sergio Garcia, first major in his career.
He's playing well.
That would be something to watch for sure. He's played well in big tournaments so far this year.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the one. I'm not going to pick Colin Montgomery, nor am I going to pick Vijay Singh, who's returning to the Open after taking three Opens off. He's back in the field.
What about Paul Dunn?
And I'm not going to pick Paul Dunn, and I'm not going to pick Scott Piercy, who's been runner-up in the last two starts to Dustin Johnson.
He's a good pick, too, the way it's been going, same form.
So don't be surprised to see Piercy do well. But I have to stay with my rule of Jason Day, and I think that bad weather is going to be a bit of an equalizer, so maybe it's not. I think that hurts Day and Dustin Johnson, but I still think he's the best player in the world, and I think he's been close to when he hasn't won. He's been close,
right.
And I think going into this year, you wouldn't have thought that Jason Day wouldn't win another major this year. If you had to pick one person, you might have picked Day. And after this, it's back to the PGA where he's already won. So this is his last chance to kind of pick up another one of those in the career Grand Slam. He's the number one player in the world. It's a world international event. And I got to stick to my guns and go with Jason Day. But if he lets me down this week,
off,
that might be it.
That's a lot of pressure to put on him.
Yeah.
Off the wagon.
Because this is he's going to see this broadcast.
Absolutely.
All the tour pros watch this.
No doubt.
Scott Piercy is going to be pumped that he got the mention.
Yes.
No question.
Colin Montgomery, too.
Paul Dunn.
Yeah.
Anybody deeper in the field that you might Sergio is he's definitely not a sleeper pick, but he's definitely – what do you think? I wish should have the odds up. I wonder what Sergio's odds are compared to the other guys like, no faith in McIlroy? Do you think McIlroy could do it?
Yeah. I do.
Oh, yeah.
My other pick was going to be Chris Wood. That's the guy I was going to come with. He'd be 6'5", yeah. 110 pounds. The wind might blow him over. But he's from that. I'm not sure what country he's from over in Europe, but he's native.
He's English.
And, again, all because of the weather and the experience of playing on the European tour.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's had a decent season. But I was until I saw the weather predictions that bad, I was leaning towards Chris Wood.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple of those days really take everybody out of it and equalize the whole field, you know, to right. a certain extent, at least right. at least the ones that are in the heart of that weather. That's mm-hmm. definitely going to, you know, affect how the final round plays out.
Right.
You got to consider Henrik Stenson is a good contender,
he's
too.
He's a ball striker.
And what about Jordan Spieth?
Yeah, we haven't said a word about
him. A year ago, he was just he missed out on the three-way playoff. He would by one shot. Otherwise, he would have won the first three majors of the year.
Right.
And he was the guy last year that you were like, eh, nobody could ever beat this guy again.
Right. Yeah.
Just like you were about McIlroy 2 years ago.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with Spieth, anytime he's in the field, he's such a good chipper and putter. And this event could boil down yeah. to that. If the wind's really howling like that. He saves himself with that. Same with Zach Johnson. Yeah. It's all about chipping and putting for him as well. He doesn't seem to stray like Jordan does
right.
off the tee. But he's not as powerful either. So anytime you got that short game, you're going to be in contention.
And Spieth at the tournament that was it, Congressional? What was the tournament that Spieth putted the lights out? It was Congressional, wasn't it? What was it? So Greenbrier was canceled this week.
Right.
Prior to that, it was the Congressional, right?
Well, it was Bridgestone was after the Congressional.
Oh, the so Bridgestone. Yeah, the Bridgestone's where Jordan Spieth had 23 putts in the first round.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It's incredible. But that also shows me that he's playing terrible.
Yeah, because he wasn't even close.
Misleading stats.
So how can you pick him to all of a sudden, you know, win at the U.S. Open when he's – or the British Open when he's playing so poorly?
He never has a 78. You know, he has a 73, a 72, even if everybody else is going, like, get 68 or 67. So he saves him that bad round that takes him out.
Yeah.
I think that's why you got to – throw him into the mix.
Oh yeah, he's definitely got to be in the mix.
Right.
But he's been in the mix less and less each week now that we've talked about.
Yeah, but yet he's third on the money list, and he's got two wins this year. You know, we're comparing it to the miracle run he had last year. He's had a way above average year.
Oh, sure. Guess it's you know, he's a victim of his own success.
Right, he even mentioned that every year I got better accomplishments. Mm-hmm. This is the first year I haven't. Well, when you have 10 in a row of years of accomplishment improvement,
it's pretty good.
Sooner or later you got to break even or slip a little bit.
Exactly.
So,
and then there's literally 30 other guys that fall into the category of like Martin Keimer, you know, or Justin Rose, or even Danny Willett, or Young An. You know, I mean, there's so many guys that which one of them are going to emerge. I think that of the guys we talked about so far, you can pretty much count on three or four of them being in contention on the final day. But there's also going to be a host of others, and who knows, Lee Westwood.
Yeah.
You know,
right. Always plays well in majors.
There's just so many guys that in a tournament like this with such a large field and such a tough course and such tough conditions, who knows?
Yeah, right. We haven't said anything about Adam Scott or anything. You know,
Here's a guy that won twice this year.
Yeah,
off
back in the winter, but didn't even mention him other than his featured pairing where he's playing with Zach Johnson and Henrik Stenson. So, but, hey, it's unlike any tournament, it's the third major, and in a lot of ways, to me, it's the final major. The PGA is great, and I do love to watch it and everything, but that's the one you'd least want to win, right? Am I right?
Well, I think
the PGA.
If you ask the players, I think you know a lot of people have said the Open is the one they want to win the most. You know,
sure, the oldest.
The oldest.
This is 145th playing.
A lot of huge names have won it. It's played only on, what is it now, 9 courses in the Rota. So there's you get familiar with the courses if you really are into it. You watch and you understand these places that it's played at. Played at St. Andrews every 5 years, so that's always a big thing. So I would say it's probably always in, you know, if you polled all the guys on average, it's in the top two. You know, there'll be your handful that, you know, a lot that want to win the Masters.
Right.
There'll be a lot from Europe side and the rest of the world that want to win the Open. And so I kind of probably half and half, and then a few here and there for the U.S. Open, but nobody's picking PGA right. over any
it's
of those
funny
three.
Little thing.
In fact, I pick one major to win. I wish it was the PGA Championship. You don't hear that
if you,
ever.
No. If you were the first major champion that you won was the PGA, in the interview, you would say, this is the one I wanted the most.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because it's the one you got now, right?
Yeah.
So, but I think the American side, they're going to lean towards the Masters, I think, overall.
Yeah.
The yeah. foreigners probably would all lean towards the British Open overall. Yeah. And the U.S. Open's got a lot up there.
Nicholas
as well.
Liked the U.S. Open the most.
What's that?
Nicholas said the one championship he wanted, major he wanted to win the most was the U.S. Open.
Right.
So,
I think the British, with all the different conditions, the style of the course,
right.
You know, weather always being a factor. Sure, the weather could be a factor at any tournament, but you know, over there, there's a good chance more than not it's gonna play some part in one of the four rounds.
Right.
I think it's the truest test of your overall game, mm-hmm. mentally, your swing, you know, what you can bear, the elements. It's right. it's got everything that
all
you
the
need.
Shot
to do.
Making you gotta
yeah.
have.
Yeah, a lot of different shot making.
It's not just a bang at golf course.
No, so I think it's that's why I like watching it the most. I think it's the truest test of all these guys' abilities.
Yeah, and a great venue this year at Royal Troon, which is a public course. You can go over and play it whenever yeah. you want. If you want to pay the greens fees, I think it's like in the peak season, it's like £220.
Yeah, it's
not, which
it's not bad.
By the way, this year, the Euro versus or the English pound versus the dollar is not very good. So
it's
like the value of the purse is way less than it was last year even.
It's a good year to go see it.
So it's a good time to travel.
Right.
Right.
Let's go.
Yeah.
If you haven't made your plans yet though, then you're probably out of luck. Because the tournament starts Thursday. So one last thing here that I thought we needed to talk about before we got out of here was John Daly did some crazy thing again this weekend. And he putted with one hand at the Dick's Open in Endicott, New York, the site of the former BC Open. The Champions Tour this week was yeah. in Endicott for the Dick's Open. And during the final round, it's unclear exactly when, but at some point he started putting with one hand. And apparently it wasn't a joke thing, like a lot of times Daly loses his temper and does crazy things. He was actually putting with just his left hand, but really, like, you know, taking his time and setting himself up and trying to make the putts. And he didn't make any or even come close. He putted horribly.
But he still finished 11th.
But John Daly's in the Open this week. So yeah. will he putt with one hand at the Open? That probably would be ill-advised.
I have some long putts that he might have that might, right. might involve needing two hands.
So he's in the Open because he's a past champ?
Yeah, I'm assuming, yeah, right? I'm assuming. But he's on the, in the field. It's got to be because he won before because he has, certainly hasn't qualified.
Right.
Yeah, he
any
has until 65 as a past champion.
Is that what they do there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They put an age on it.
A few years back, they added the age to it, and I think that's when Jack's last one, he was one of those guys, or Watson last year, was 65. So, yeah, they did add an age limit to it. Not that long ago, though.
Yeah, not in 1973, because the answer to the trivia question is Gene Sarazen at age 71 aced that eighth hole at Troon.
That's awesome.
And there's video footage of it. If you want to search it up on YouTube, you can see it. And so that could never happen again. And he does look like a bit of an elderly man. He was a short guy to begin with, and he just looks kind of like, you know, he was wearing knickers.
Did you get the club? Did he hit a driver?
No, you know, I couldn't tell you the club, but he didn't ace that hole at age 71 in a major championship. So I'm sure he wasn't in contention in 73. That year it was won by Tom Weisskopf.
We gotta find out what club he used. I'm going with a 5-iron.
It'll be difficult to match the best finish at Royal Troon in the Open, because in 1923 Arthur Havens holed a bunker shot in the 72nd hole to win the first Open at Royal Troon. Arthur Havens,
household name.
Bobby Locke won one of his two Opens in 1950. at Royal Troon as well. And the winners list includes Arnold Palmer, Tom Weisskopf, Tom Watson, Mark Kalkovecchia, Justin Leonard, and Todd Hamilton. Not the Olympic gymnast or ice skater, but the golfer.
Newly grizzled Justin Leonard.
Yes.
With his full-on beard and longer hair.
Yeah, he was on the in the broadcast booth for the Barracuda.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago.
Okay. Was he? So he had the beard then. I didn't see that.
I think he did. Yeah. I think he's grown a little bit since then.
Hard to picture him with. He's a very clean cut guy all these years. Hard to picture him with a beard. But hey, if it works for him.
One major championship for Justin Leonard, and that was at the Open.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So at Troon.
That's right.
So hey, almost time to get out of here. Rhett, what we have going on this week at GolfJ.com?
Well, we're going to talk to the guys at Bogey Box Golf, another one of those apparel. You can order stuff online, apparel, they'll ship it right to you and try it out and keep what you like and send back what you
monthly
don't.
Fee or?
No, it's just you can pick the frequencies of how often you want to order garments. You kind of give a little review with one of their salespeople, and then they'll send you some stuff based on what you've talked to them about and what you've put down as in your profile. You can get stuff from them once a year, four times a year, once a month. So there's some good benefits to this too. It's a little different than short par four, so we can get into that too when we talk to those guys, and we'll put that on our site in the near future.
Yeah, I have a short par four box coming, and I'm going to maybe unbox it right here on the show.
Bam. The reveal.
Would it be next week or the week after? They ship on the 15th. So
it'll be Friday.
You're getting close.
You won't have it by next Monday?
You're right, so it'll be 2 weeks.
It'll be good, though, for the...
Can you wait till Christmas to open that up?
I don't know. I'll have to see.
Can you actually wait? Have it sitting at your house waiting to open it?
Well, that'll be a question for another podcast.
Absolutely.
But, British Open week. Let's go. 10 weeks left until the Tour Championship. It's just kind of blows my mind because it feels like we're right in the middle and we got so much of the season left, but we got 10 weeks, which is nothing.
Right.
You know, we're what, 7 weeks away from NFL football?
Yeah.
Labor Day weekend.
10 weeks to the end of the season, 13th to the start of the season. 15. So we're looking at like 16 weeks. We got to keep golfing.
FedEx Cup ends in the end of September.
Yep.
And Ryder Cup's the first week of October. And then around here in the Northeast, a couple more weeks of playing golf.
Right.
Yeah. I love it.
But. Hey, don't want to get you all down. There's lots of great golf left to watch, and some of the best golf to watch ahead of us, too. It's going to be great. There's a different year going on here with the Olympics, and then the FedEx Cup playoffs should be phenomenal this year. Mm-hmm. So hey, thanks, everybody, for spending some time with us on the Golf J podcast. Connect with us online at Twitter at the Golf J, Instagram at the _Golf J, and we're on Facebook now at facebook.com/GolfJ.
Yep.
Which is easy to find and easy to remember. All of our episodes and the best of the wide world of golf can be found at golfj.com. We'll be back next Monday night at 9 p.m. to recap the action at Royal Troon. So until then, enjoy Open Championship Golf, and remember to hit them long, not often.